from the community and the public of what's going to happen. Like, some people are going to take this as a negative.
Yep.
Some are going to take it as a positive. So I think we're going to see Ripple come out with some type of blueprint or a little more public information leading up to this IPO. And that'll help us as a community understand what their game plan is here, and especially with the escrow. But we do have to understand that they're two separate asset classes. So Ripple stock, you know, is equity in the company. It's not going to be able to be used the way that XRP is used as a settlement asset.
Well,
you know, that was the, and Scott, you'll have to pardon me, but that was actually one of my opening questions. So let me pursue it with you just a moment.
Okay.
The IPO is, in fact, and by the way, I went ahead and started recording. I'll put an introduction on it later, like I usually do, but you're already getting in some interesting topics, so I had to hit the record button anyway. The IPO itself, Twitter is just blown up with all the, is it good for XRP? Is it bad for XRP? And all the other good stuff. And then it doesn't seem like they realize that Ripple and XRP aren't coupled. They're actually two separate entities, the software company and the opposite side with XRP. But everybody still says, well, how's this going to affect the price of XRP? So what's your opinion there, my man?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it kind of threw us all a little by surprise. I mean, we talked about this a month ago, but now we see that they came out and announced it. We have to go based on what we know. And what we know is that XRP is being ramped up in RippleNet to be used in ODL as a settlement asset between fiat payments cross-border. So we know that that's already happening with XRP. Now with Ripple stock, we only know that they're pre-announcing an announcement of an IPO in the future. So how will it affect XRP directly? I only see beneficial coming out of this. And to dive deeper into it, they said traditional IPO. But as we know, Sologenic is tokenizing stocks right on the XRP ledger.
Yes.
So I think it's fair to say and assume that there's going to be a tokenized version of Ripple stock. So that's going to be traded against XRP on the XRP ledger. And now you could also add into that, they're invested in securitized. I mean, they could do a traditional IPO and also make true security tokens out of this, and have the compliance and the whitelisting built into the actual security tokens. And now this could trade against XRP. I only see this as a positive because they're two separate assets in two separate asset classes. And it actually brings a divide, separates XRP from Ripple, the company. So now you actually will have two tokens that truly separate XRP is a utility asset and equity in Ripple, the company. So I think it's going to have an extremely positive effect on XRP price because it's going to bring more attention to Ripple, the company, and then therefore to their main source of revenue, which is software built on the XRP ledger.
Well, that's a good point. I think it was yesterday, Crypto Area came on and was talking about the roadshow before the IPO, and which of course means they're going to go around, they're going to talk about the upcoming event and talk to the bankers, and they're going to have a lot of news out there and so forth. So it's going to ramp up the visibility for XRP just rolling into an IPO. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think we'll get more visibility, more transparency on some of the partnerships. And like what Bob Way said, they'll lay out more of a blueprint of what they're looking to do and how it affects the banks on RippleNet, the money service providers, the X-Spring projects, the investments they're invested into. I think we'll see more transparency, and that'll be great leading into the IPO. I think it's just hard to speculate exactly how it's going to affect right now, but I can't see any negative effects. I just don't see it.
Well, I do know, and of course, I have heard, as I shouldn't say I do know, because I don't think anybody knows everything, but I do know that a private company, for example, if they wanted to invest more or even become, you know, a major holder in MoneyGram, it's very difficult for a private company to come in and take over a public company. So
very true.
A public company as well, their chances of maybe even taking over controlling interest to MoneyGram are much higher.
Absolutely. And also it would make it easier for them. If you go back, I've listened to a lot of Miguel Villa's videos, and he always talks about Ripple coming up with interesting derivatives and lending products. So if they're able to even acquire some type of, not necessarily maybe a bank, but a financial institution that would allow them to structure derivatives and lending products around the XRP they hold, say it be the escrow or even the 6.5 billion, it allows them to do more things if they're public. So they could take over a MoneyGram, even acquire some type of financial institution that has the licensing. Because we know that XRP2 is their subsidiary, and they're the ones who actually have the BIT license in New York. And they have the license in Switzerland to sell XRP. Once they go public, though, they're going to have to disclose basically everything at that point.
Yes, and that's a big advantage to the XRP army. We're going to have total transparency.
We'll have, like Crypto Erie said, I speak to Crypto Erie often. I really like her, and she's very insightful. It's going to be a process. So I think, you know, they just made this announcement. So I think we're going to see the transparency actually ramp up with everything else leading up to it. And then when the IPO happens, I mean, like she said, it's 4 to 6 month process. And they just finished their Series C funding. So now that $200 million, I still think we could see an acquisition prior to an IPO, because they're going to want to build up Ripple, the company, as much as possible in value once they IPO.
You think it was, that money's going to be used for acquisition or something else? I'm not sure.
I mean, it could be used for multiple different things. One, we know that they were sitting on $300 million or so cash. Prior to that, Brad Garlinghouse said in an interview. Now they got a new $200 million. They have 55 job openings that they listed on their website. So they are expanding rapidly. But what are they going to do with that $200 million, you know?
Yeah, and we're not going to know, actually, because they're a private company. But
that's exactly what it is. We don't really know until it happens. And, I mean, making them public, I think the fact that we're able to buy XRP prior to them becoming public is tremendous for us as XRP holders, because we're in before the masses get bombarded with all this attention from the media.
Right. Exactly. And then, by the way, backing up a little bit, Crypto Area has been on XRP Unplugged, our podcast here, in the past. And after the podcast, we must have been on the phone together for 45 minutes. She is a wonderful, wonderful lady with a lot of knowledge. So I really appreciate her a lot.
Me too.
That IPO, though, it's caused so much controversy that I kind of chuckle. Because it really, they're gonna do it regardless of what anybody says, but that's not what's important. What's important is, of course, how it affects other people's investments, which are, in most of our cases, we can't buy stock. However, I understand that you can go to, what is it called? Shares Post, and you can actually buy Ripple on Shares Post. I didn't know Ripple stock. I didn't realize that. So,
I've seen that too before. But I think Ripple's in a very unique position. You know, if you look at the traditional markets, IPOs in general have been declining, and there haven't been too many successful tech IPOs recently. No. So I would think with this, let me just give a quick backstory. Before I got into XRP, really deep about 2 years ago, I was really looked hard into the security token market, and companies like Securitize, Polymath, they're looking to tokenize all types of private stocks, public stocks, any type of equity. So that market is coming. So I can't see how Ripple wouldn't want want to take advantage of that and why the companies wouldn't want Ripple to be a part of that, since they're one of probably the top crypto blockchain companies on the market right now. So by tokenizing the shares, it changes everything than just a traditional IPO like, say, Uber had. Now you can give access to the rest of the world to own these either security tokens or tokenized shares, and it's going to, in a similar way but different, be like XRP. It's going to bring more attention to XRP. It's only a positive thing. I struggle to see any negatives here. I think it's immensely positive for us at this moment to hold XRP before the IPO. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
So you actually think you'll be able to buy a tokenized stock, in other words, portions of stock, much like the real estate ideas and so forth, is buying just pieces of it? Or do you think you would have to pay for a full stock certificate? What's your opinion on that?
I think that they could, yes, I think they will be able to buy tokenized versions of it, like what Sologenic is doing, right, where they're going to tokenize the stocks on the XRP ledger and the Sologenic platform. But they could do a traditional IPO in a sense and then allow that to happen. And you could also, on top of that, then create true security tokens, mm-hmm, which would have all the compliance and everything baked into it. So I think, yes, we will be able to buy fractional shares. So say if for some reason, Ripple stock went up to a high amount, you could buy a fractional. That's where we're going with that industry. That's something we have to look out for leading up to this. Like, they use the word IPO. They didn't say STO, which is right, a security token offering. So I think we will see fractional ownership. Yes.
Now, that was the some of the speculation. Why don't they go SPO? But I think there's some obvious reasons why they shouldn't do that, mm-hmm, process. And you're right, because IPOs have been so few and far between in late 2018, all the way through 2019. When a true IPO comes out, especially in a, air quotes, glamorous area like cryptocurrency, I think it's going to absolutely explode, because there hasn't been much of it out there as far as IPOs go.
Absolutely. And like Brad Gollinghouse said in the Sheesh program, we're not going to be the first, but we're not going to be the last. So companies like Bitmain and the other mining, Canon, will come out first. And then you have companies like Circle, so Ripple might not be the first one to do it, but they're going to be right in the front of that pack, I think. So we'll see how those affect the market. But at the same time, those companies don't have an XRP or crypto asset pretty much that they're building on.
And they don't have the assets in place that Ripple does either, as far as I can see anyway.
Absolutely not. And I just wanted to bring up one other point about the Ripple valuation, that we got this $10 billion valuation, but it's not all because of the XRP holdings that they have. About a year ago, Bob Way came on, a couple YouTube videos, and he said that their holdings are really only worth 3 cents if they went to sell them all at the market. So now we got to assume that valuation of what they're holding, if it's $55 billion, is valued at 3 cents. So where is all that other valuation coming from? So,
good point.
The one thing I always looked at is they have this proprietary software that they're using within RippleNet. And that's what's giving them the valuation and the network effect of everything. So
how will regulations start affecting us? Everybody's hammering away at regulations and trying to get it. We're talking about internationally, not just in the U.S. Mm-hmm. In fact, at Davos, I knew some discussions came up there, but let's face it, Davos is a great place for the rich guys to rub shoulders, have drinks together, and make deals. And you're not going to hear a lot coming out of Davos about any deals being made. But just to back up a minute, what do you think the takeaway from Davos? I think it's still going on, though, isn't it? But what do you think the takeaway so far is from Davos?
I think the fact that Ripple was there and sponsored that meeting with the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
They gave themselves a platform to grab some attention. But like you said, most of the deals are happening behind closed doors.
Mm-hmm.
But my biggest takeaway was the Davos, the World Economic Forum document for the central bank's toolkit for CBDCs. They released, and it shows XRP as part of that toolkit for interbank settlement.
I didn't know that. Now, this is
you
news.
Didn't see that.
Tell me about this. No, come on. This is news to me.
Yeah, so the World Economic Forum laid out a 15-page document for a toolkit for central banks when they're creating CBDCs. So for cross-border settlement, they named Ripple's XRP and JPM Morgan coin and utility settlement coin. But those are both still theoretical. I mean, they actually named XRP as the settlement asset in the toolkit to be used between CBDCs of different countries. So I think that's just huge news. And it kind of did fly under the radar, and they didn't say it, but it's part of that toolkit that all these central banks are going to be given. You know, it's like a layout from the World Economic Forum. And I think that's really big. I mean, they're naming XRP. They're telling us, hey, this is what you want to use for your settlement asset.
So that being said, you don't think that with the central banks all talking about coming out with their own sovereign coins, you don't think mm-hmm. those coins are going to impact XRP?
I think they're gonna accelerate the use of XRP, because what it will allow is the settlement domestically, the last mile of the transaction to happen instantly. They're gonna need to settle. They don't want to be holding each other's CBDCs. Even if they're built on R3, we have Core to Settler with XRP to settle between them, which could plug in, is basically an ILP connector, could plug into RippleNet. I see CBDCs as something that's going to accelerate the adoption of XRP, because that guy Benoit Quare said our number one priority is cross-border payments, settlements, right? Mm-hmm. Then CBDCs. But all they're doing is talking about CBDCs. So basically, I take it as your solution for your settlements is already in place. It's live on RippleNet. They're using it. It's proving itself. Now you develop the CBDCs around the settlement asset.
Do you see in the let's jump over to and talk about the cross-border settlement, mm-hmm. only plan in place, and for the most part, and that's SWIFT. Mm-hmm. And of course, SWIFT supposedly can't compete with XRP, but do you see them running as parallel rails for a while XRP gets strength, or you see SWIFT fighting them off and making up their own system, since they're already in place, making up their own system to compete with Ripple?
I see them running in parallel, because instant payments creates a need for instant settlement. And SWIFT is not capable of doing instant settlement. And they rely on the corresponding banking network for settlement. So for the faster that they create instant payments, it's actually a positive for XRP, because they're going to need instant settlement then. So I see RippleNet slowly in each of these corridors dissolving the correspondent banking network, which is going to hurt SWIFT. I don't see SWIFT is just a messaging company. They've never been into the settlement. RippleNet is an XRP or settlement. So that's where the separation lies. And I think at some point, SWIFT is just going to have to adopt their APIs, RippleNet, and then just send their messages into RippleNet to use XRP for settlement. It might not be direct, but I think, to answer your question, I think they'll run parallel for a while, and then SWIFT will just have to accept that correspondent banking networks are not working, and we have a better settlement network through RippleNet.
Yeah, and it will take an adoption period, of course.
Of course, and they don't want to disrupt. That's why I see the IMF involved, the Bank of International Settlements, they don't want to cause such disruption in certain corridors where it crashes the banking system of, you know, an exotic corridor. So that's why they're working with them. They got to dissolve those banking relationships slowly.
Which Ripple seems to be doing a darn good job of. They're
absolutely.
I would love to be an XRP or Ripple salesman. I really would.
Me too. I'm in sales myself, and I would love to be.
That'd be a dream job for me, I tell you.
I agree. Yeah, and it's interesting that the first 100 customers were really banks. So those first 100 are set up as like the hubs in each corridor.
Yeah.
And they're going to like replace what the old banking corresponding network is. So now they're really focusing on the money service providers and all that. But the big banks are already in place.
Well, speaking of corridors, where's the XRP going to, and Ripple, where are they going to break out? Which corridor really, I see a few already shaping up quickly, but where's the breakthrough that is just going to go, wow, we're in place in that area? Where do you see it happening at?
That's a great question, because the Q4 report they just released, it was difficult the way they worded it, but they said USD and Euro corridors. After rereading it a few times, I took it as not USD to Euro, but the Euro corridor is now opened to Mexico, Australia, all those other exotic corridors now. So now we have USD and Euro open to all the corridors that were named: Brazil, Australia, Philippines. What's the other one over there? Then there's a few others in that south, Thailand. And then the third one I think we're going to see on the big is going to be Japanese yen. So once we get those three big originating corridors, so I'm talking about money originating in the USD, Euro, and Japanese yen, and then flowing out as remittances back home to those migrants. Once we get those three going, that's once we could really ramp up ODL, because we really only had USD so far. And now they added Euro, which I think, you know, is the second biggest. And then SBI, you got with the third. So now you got those three huge corridors originating payments into all those exotic ones. And now companies like MoneyGram and TransferGo, who have accounts with banks in those corridors where they're just holding wasted capital and exotic currencies to pay out, they could slowly use that money to absorb XRP as the ODL payments go into there. And now the originating corridors, USD, EUR, and Japanese yen, who are supplying the XRP for the ODL, are going to have to then buy off the open market. And now this is what I think is the biggest difference between XRapid and ODL. Now you create another buy, and you don't have a sell on the beneficiary side. Yeah. They're just absorbing the XRP. So that utility is the demand that will drive up XRP price. Now, do they do it in a Shane Ellis fashion, or do they do it in a slow ramp up? Regardless how they do it, it's going to eat up XRP off the open market. And I think seeing the Euro corridor open was just huge. I was very excited by that. And we know SBI is coming soon with Japan. So I think we're very close, my friend. I think we're getting close.
Well, I know that the Japanese are really getting into it. But who's the big banker over there, the big investor, Sakamino or whatever? Do you remember his name? He's over there buying up regional banks, tying them together in a big network, and introducing the XRP as the transactions from those banks. So he's making a huge investment in Japan right now.
Absolutely. Are you talking about Yoshi Katao?
Katao, yes. Thank you.
Yes. Oh, he's one of our biggest supporters. The fact that we have that subsidiary, Ripple Asia and SBI on board, they're the top shareholder in Ripple now. You know, they own, I think it's 10 to 12% of Ripple.
Yes.
So they're huge. I mean, I think we're going to see them come on. If you look at the SBI PDFs, it says around April, that's when the new regulations go in place over there.
Mm-hmm.
Once we see USD, Euro, and then Japan go on, I think we have enough ODL flow to really start ramping up the utility.
Well, the guy is so intelligent. He's going out and buying up these little regional banks and building a conglomerate that's going to swallow up the biggest banks in Japan.
You're absolutely right. I mean,
can do when they've got money and brains, right?
And he's creating synergies so that once he buys up this regional bank, it's going to work with one of his subsidiaries. Mm-hmm. So he's creating a massive ecosystem over there that is going to swallow up. It's going to create, I believe Crypto Era used the word fourth mega bank of Japan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And she's right.
He's a genius. I mean, he's brilliant. He comes from SoftBank, and they've had this plan in place for a while.
But I'm not sure why are banks not holding XRP?
Okay. That's a great question. Why they're not holding it right now, I would say, first, the custody solution is the biggest concern. Well, was the biggest concern in the past. PolySign is solving that, and I think that's pretty much live on RippleNet in stealth. The second reason is, you said holding, not buying, right?
Correct, yes.
All right, so custody would be the biggest reason they're not holding publicly, but we don't know if somebody is holding it for them. You know, there could be wallets that PolySign are holding for certain banks. We just don't have that public information. Why they're not buying, I think that they're going to absorb the XRP through the ODL transactions. Huh. And instead of having to go onto the exchanges, like the banks taking like some exotic currency and trying to buy XRP with it or convert it to USD, then go to an exchange and buy it, they could just absorb the ODL transactions and that come into their destination corridor. They use that exotic currency to buy up the XRP that came over the ledger with it. And now they obtain the XRP that way. And now the originating market maker has to resupply their inventory. They're the ones who are going to then go buy off the open market because they're the hedge funds, the liquidity providers. So that's why I think that question has stumped us for so long. Why aren't they just going out there buying XRP? Because they're going to be able to just absorb it through RippleNet and provide the payouts. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, every corridor is still going to need a destination payout. But if they have CBDCs, then they won't need that. So that's what it's very interesting what's going on. It's very complicated.
I've heard that, for example, even MoneyGram doesn't really hold any XRP. In order to accomplish what they're doing is by going through exchanges. Is that a fallacy or? Is that close to there?
Yes and no. Now, in between the crypto exchange on the RippleNet exchange, right?
Yes.
And MoneyGram, there could be a market maker who could hold it for MoneyGram and could supply the XRP to MoneyGram without MoneyGram actually having to go to the exchange to buy it or deal with any exchange. They could be, I call them white label exchanges. And Crypto Era got this out of the Flash FX CEO when he said outside market makers. So that gave us the insight that, hey, MoneyGram doesn't have to open an account with an Australian crypto exchange. They could use a RippleNet member who we just don't know about that's running white label exchange software that could sell them the XRP for the fiat. And now they could go on to the exchanges and they could tap into any exchange in the world. They don't have to deal with only RippleNet. So MoneyGram could be holding XRP through this custodian market maker that we don't know about. or they could just be using them to source the XRP, but we might never see it on an RippleNet enabled exchange. Yeah. I know that's hard to explain, but
that's great. In fact, is that in some ways a way to circumvent some regulations as well?
It would be to circumvent them having to deal with the exchanges themselves, because like we know, the FATF is still trying to regulate all the exchanges, and we're never going to have an exchange in every single corridor, especially these exotic ones that are going to have a high enough liquidity. And MoneyGram might not want to hold accounts with them. They might want an XRP wallet that's just part of RippleNet that PolySign manages the keys for. Now, if this market maker hedge fund deals directly with them, they're kind of an extra security buffer for the XRP transaction, and also protects their privacy from when that ODL transaction actually goes over the ledger and it's publicly seen. So MoneyGram and other money service providers don't want to give too much transparency over the XRP ledger to where somebody could see who's who. So that's what that does. It creates an extra layer of security buffer for them to have to deal with these unregulated crypto exchanges.
It actually makes sense, but it's way over my financial head, to say the least. Now, that being said, this next question could be an entire podcast all its own. But
okay,
just touch on it lightly, and that is the fact that we're pretty aware that the world financial market is not well right now. It's got a virus going on, as indicated by the repo here, market here in the U.S., shoring up our banks on a daily basis with billions and trillions of dollars. It's got to explode sometime. And when it does, or if it does, I should say, not trying to do a conspiracy theory at all, I'm just looking at what I see happening. If the bubble bursts on the banks, what's going to happen to XRP and all this planning that's being done?
I totally agree with you. I think it's going to bust. It's only a matter of time. As XRP being part of a new asset class, I think you're going to see value flow into the new asset class. And XRP has something additional that, say, Bitcoin and other crypto assets don't have. It could provide liquidity, where in the last financial crisis, we had a liquidity crisis. That was a major problem. Now, XRP is a solution to that. So besides it being just an asset to invest in that's uncorrelated with traditional markets, it's also going to be able to help liquidity moving between these different fiat currencies. So I think it's going to be huge. And that's one of the things that brought me into XRP in the very beginning 2 years ago, was that we see that they're really artificially pumping this market to keep it going, but at some point it's going to pop, and when it does, the value is going to transfer over to another asset class, and XRP just happens to be in that new asset class. And I also think that we have to take into consideration here the generational differences. Traditionally, the baby boomers, Generation X, would go towards precious metals, but now we have a huge generation of millennials that are going to look for new asset classes, and that are just heading into their prime, where they're going to be the biggest investing generation in the next couple years. So now these millennials are more digitally aware, and I think they're going to be more likely to put money into digital assets than precious metals. I do think precious metals will still be a safe haven, but I think there's a lot of that. Those people that are supporters of precious metals underestimating the millennial generation and how they're going to look towards digital assets. And I think we're smack dab in the perfect spot, XRP, because we could do both. We can be a store of value and we could be a liquidity solution. And that's coming, I think. I think the election is is a big part of everything too. I think it'll be after the election.
Yes. Well, of course, all you hear is how wonderful our economy is. And of course, you know, if you just look at job growth and things of that nature, yeah, I guess it's doing pretty darn well, but there aren't going to be any jobs if the bust happens. They're going to go
absolutely
away.
And the data can be manipulated.
We had some tools to work with in the last crisis. We were able to lower interest rate, for example. We had we had other tools that we have wasted now. We're down to 1%, and they're being there are some people talking about zero or a negative percentage rates. So we can't add any type of value there. And so our toolbox is almost empty as far as recovering from the next crisis like we were able to in 2008, I believe it was, 2007. But we don't have those tools left anymore.
Absolutely. And that's just the U.S. I mean, look at Euro and Japan. They're in negative interest rates already. So, yeah. I mean, is the U.S. going to be able to not just bail itself out, but bail out all those countries again? I'm with you. I just can't see it happening. But I think this is why they're putting a solution. I think they do have a plan in place, and I believe XRP is part of that plan. Like, we're at those stages now, for when that happens. This goes back to CBDCs and stable coins. Mm-hmm. Who's going to want to create a stable coin and have negative interest rates on it? I mean, where's the profit come from for the company who creates that?
It's not going to be there, period. It's just not going to be there.
I know. That's what David Schwartz always says. Ripple's in a position to that no other entity is in to create an asset that has an asset like this. Because any type of stablecoin is attached to that country's monetary policies and interest rates. And when you start going negative, you know, where's the profit come from to create a stablecoin? And now if you create CBDCs that don't pay interest and you have negative interest on the bank deposits, people are going to have a bank run and they're all going to run the CBDCs. So I think the central banks are really in a tough position here on how they could create the CBDCs without damaging the financial system.
Unless they've got a heck of a plan, I don't see any way, period. And that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it comes after. Like, we need to get through this bust cycle, like you said.
And it's going to last longer than the last one. The last one was long enough, but this will last longer. The recovery period's going to be longer on this one. Again, that's just personal opinion.
I agree with you on that, though, but you're right. That is our opinion.
Yeah, we shall see. Now, just out of respect for your time, I want to ask you a last question. And sure. I think it's obvious what your answer might be, but we'll find out. But what's your level of belief from a year ago to now in Ripple and XRP?
That's a great question. And I think the best way I could answer this is I believed in it 100% a year ago. But over this last year, I've found so much validation that I now believe in it 200%. When you see things like the Davos document saying XRP is going to be used to settle between CBDCs. So I'm at 200% validated that XRP is going to be on the global stage and part of the new financial system. I was confident a year ago, but now I am twice as confident from the validation of all the information that I found and seen others find. Just because they don't say it on a public stage, XRP, but we see that they're working with the Treasury Department. Like, you take a look at just Ripple's board of directors has brought on the Treasury Secretary, head of counsel. We have Gene Sperling, former economic advisor to the White House. We have Anaya Manuel, who's former State Department. The way they set up their board of directors and their high level just shows that they're going in this direction to be something massive of a company, but that they're setting the asset up to be decentralized and used on a global stage. And they're putting the right people in place to handle the operations. And I think that's one thing a year ago, I didn't realize as much. And now I really see that it's coming along. And Ken Kersen, who is Trump's close friend, is on that board of directors. And in my opinion, he has no business being there from his background, but he's there because he's Trump's eyes and ears.
Ah, okay. That happens often with Trump, doesn't it?
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to talk politics, but I think that's important to know that we have a balanced board of directors. And in the beginning, it used to be just a lot of the VC investors like Santander, one of the other one, Lightvast, and they removed all those and they created a board of directors that's very balanced. You have your top shareholder is Yoshi Katow, Chris Larson, and Brad, Sanford professor, and then those four former government officials. So it's very balanced. And that's so important, I think, because those are the people who are making the high-level decisions of where Ripple is going as a company.
Well, that certainly is true, and I don't want to take any more of your time. However,
hey, ask away. I got time.
All right, we talk about the IPO. Let's just kind of flip back to the beginning here a little bit, just for a moment. The IPO itself, it seems that the IPO is almost the next step for Ripple, and the reason I say that is that we've had their stage one, I call it stage two, and stage three, or stage A, B, and C, whatever, of investment. And some of the same people that were in stage one or A also invested at stage three. And Google, of course, being one of them, several other major companies, but they are ready, I think, after 6 or 7 or 8 years to get a little money back. So I'm not sure that some of this IPO talk isn't a little pressure from the big investors. What do you think?
I do see that. Yes, they do want their money back at some point here. And this is, it's a natural progression, like they said. I think we're heading towards the IPO is a natural stage. And even the fact that Bob Way talked about this a year ago, they do want their money to come back. I do think there's still a question about what happens to the escrow, and that's very important. We don't know yet.
Yeah, that's definitely a mystery right there.
So I think this is great news with the IPO. I think it's phenomenal, and it's only going to be beneficial, but we have to not jump to conclusions so quick. We're going to get more transparency and more of a blueprint. Yeah. But we have the facts of what they're doing still. So we don't want to speculate on negative things that are unknowns. Let's go based off the knowns, right?
That's right. That's right. Whatever happens to the escrow, we won't know until after it happens anyway.
Exactly. And it's important to know that the wallets that the escrow is released to can be sold. So yeah. That's an important technical detail that there's so much they could do with the escrow. I think it's the most advantageous, one of the most advantageous aspects of XRP on a global stage. Because in the future, by having the supply locked up in an escrow, you create monetary policy out of this. You could drip feed liquidity into the network when needed. It allows for distribution in ways that almost future-proof it, you know, instead of Bitcoin, which just spits out Bitcoin to pay for electricity. Right. To communist nations.
It provides the stability of the coin that none of the rest of the coins have. So
absolutely. If I can make one more point, it's interesting that Ripple hasn't sold any XRP in the last 2 months. I mean, everyone was saying they were dumping on the market, and look, they've sold zero. I know it was just 100 million the month before and zero the month before that. I mean, that tells me that the initial market makers or whoever they needed to incentivize are loaded up to get going.
Very, very good point. Now, the thing that is will may trick you up here, and you may not want to answer this one, But okay. I got Cryptopolis to penny up or ante up on this one when I was interviewing him. And I said, all right, when is XRP going to hit $100? And he gave me a date and time. Are you willing to plug into a date and time, Mickey B?
I hate to do date and times, but you know what? If I had to guess, I mean, if you're going to ask me when I think it would go to $100, I mean, I hate to give out dates and the prices. Man. I mean, I think the sky's the limit on the price. It would be easier to answer this if I saw the ODL ramping up and seeing how it's affecting price. But we haven't seen how the utility is yet affecting price. $100. We got to three, so 10 times, 30 times the amount. I mean, I think it's possible to happen within a year. That's what I think I could say. Okay. If ODL ramps up and we get an IPO, I think it's possible to happen within a year. Possible. Is that good enough?
Well, that's great because you're right in line with the Cryptopolis. So it's nice
really?
To hear that two of the most brilliant influencers in the XRP Army group have given a similar answer. It's encouraging for the entire Army, all right?
Yeah, I just don't want to put it on it, but I think that as utility ramps up, we'll be able to pinpoint a better idea of when we're going to get to that level. We just haven't seen enough. But if we keep observing the market and what impacts it, and especially ODL, we'll have a better idea of how quick, you know, that could happen in a month once it ramps up. But as of right now, I say it's possible within a year. I love Cryptopolis, by the way, and we talk often.
That's good. He is brilliant, does great research, always enjoying hearing what he has to say.
Yes, I did not know that he gave that answer, though. I did not know.
So. Well, you'll have to go to his the recording of his podcast on the XRPArmyNews.com to find out for sure.
Absolutely.
Your recording of this one will be on the XRP Army News site. If you're not familiar with it, please go take a look because we have all the major influencers' YouTube channels are there with the most recent YouTube video easily accessible. All the Twitter channels, even though you don't like Twitter, that's all right. I understand. I don't either. But the entire thing is laid out for anyone who wants a central access point to learn everything that they would want to know about XRP. It's on the XRP Army News, which is a part of XRP Unplugged. Mickey B, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate your freshness of comments because they're in-depth and I think they're extremely well-researched and felt deeply down inside as far as letting us share what you have to know. Thank you so much, Mickey B. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great and I'm willing to do it again. Thank you so much. It was a great time.
I look forward to it. Hang around in the green room. We may chat with you just a couple of more minutes. And
sure.
All right. For all of those out there in XRP and XRP Unplugged for this episode, which, by the way, the syndication of this episode and several others will be live on iTunes and all the other your favorite podcast stations in February. So be sure to catch up with all of the latest things that are happening in the XRP world. We'll talk to you all on the next episode. Bye-bye.